teams covered, no talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
I've made a decision that every time I walk by Lance's office, and Lance, of course, is in his office watching NFL draft prospects, I am from now on, and I just did this as I walk by, I'm just going to say Will Levis, loud enough for him to hear me. Every single time that I see Lance Erline, I'm going to say Will Levis.
And I'm going to walk right behind you and say, puts mayonnaise in his coffee. That's all we're talking about.
I don't know why you're so anti-mayonnaise and coffee. It's a fatty coffee. It's like bulletproof coffee. It's like a keto coffee.
It really is.
Pause. Have you had it?
I wouldn't dare try it.
It sounds disgusting.
You have to try it, Jeremy.
Disgusting. Sounds disgusting, no, looks disgusting.
Joel,
I've had fatty coffee. I've had bulletproof coffee.
We cannot let him say, I don't know why you're so against this, not try it.
I don't think it would taste good, but it's hell. Now, Will Levis didn't do it
so
for health reasons.
So if we bring one in here
Will
right
Levis
now
is doing it to be funny.
Some Hellman's in there, you're going to give it a go?
I don't like fatty coffee. I've tried it before. Whenever I was in my health kick, like 6 or 7 years ago.
You tried it before.
Yeah, well, not the mayonnaise. I've tried fatty coffee. Fatty coffee is a very popular thing.
What is
it's
that?
A bulletproof thing. You just put like some element of fat in your coffee. Usually it's butter. Usually it's butter, not mayonnaise. But you're putting an element of fat into your coffee, and it's very like health conscious. It's like a keto type of thing where you're
Wouldn't
getting
you
a lot
put,
of fat
like,
in you.
Creamer
you can do
or
that
something?
Too. Now that's actually like next level is doing like heavy cream butter. Coffee. That's like bulletproof coffee.
Oh,
there's like
put
different
the
variations
butter in there. I understand.
I've done the butter element of fatty coffee. I don't like fatty coffee, so I don't think it's good, but it can be health conscious. Now, Will Levis isn't doing it to be health conscious. Will Levis is doing it for clout, and he also ate a banana whole. So, like, Will Levis is just goofy like that when it comes to that.
I just think it is
a banana whole. He didn't peel it?
No, he ate a banana whole.
Oh, my God. I just think it is insane for you to sit here and defend, not Will Levis,
right,
but specifically mayo and coffee.
I didn't say it's good. I'm saying that it's health conscious.
You're defending it.
I'm defending the, like, yeah, kind of, I guess.
Then I need you to try it.
I've had it.
You have not?
I've had fatty coffee. I haven't had mayonnaise as the fat in fatty coffee. But I've had it with butter. I don't like it. Why would I want to try it?
You're defending it, and you haven't had it. This idea that I've had fatty coffee, therefore
I've had
mayo in coffee is ridiculous.
Mayonnaise is mostly fat.
It is ridiculous.
How's
you have not had
you're
it.
You're just trying to get me to try it.
You think
Will
that butter
done it.
In coffee and mayo in coffee taste similar? You think they're similar things?
Because
I don't.
The taste is probably not similar. No. No, but I think that the purpose
is
similar.
You do heavy cream
because
cream and coffee go together. It would be very easy to literally stomach it.
Yeah.
The thought of butter in my coffee.
Yeah, it's not very good. I didn't like it.
Not as bad as mayonnaise,
but it's bulletproof coffee. It's bulletproof coffee.
Well, it's not bulletproof, I can tell you that.
It's what all those jacked dudes like to drink in the morning. Get them going. You know, they put a little bit of that in there and they get going. 713-780-ESPN. You know what I'm talking about, right? Bulletproof coffee. 713-780-3776. Good news coming out.
Sounds
last
like a
few
thousand
minutes.
Pound sisters.
No, it's actually the opposite of that.
I don't know, man.
It sounds
butter and heavy cream and coffee is woof.
It gets you going. You have to research the keto diet a little bit. Damar Hamlin, of course, the Buffalo Bill that got knocked unconscious on Monday, had cardiac arrest, got transported to the hospital. They had to get his heartbeat back in order. Has been in the hospital, has been in an induced coma. But the doctors right now at UC Medical Center are putting together, like, they're hosting a press conference via Zoom from the hospital.
It has been a marathon.
UC Cincinnati Medical Center, which I'm headed to Cincinnati this weekend. But they've been on for 30 minutes or so.
At least a half hour, yes.
Yeah, and we're seeing a lot of quotes on Twitter, things like that. We obviously can't see what they're saying or hear what they're saying on TV because we haven't muted. Apparently, one of the things that came out is that he has been in he woke up last night, has been holding the hands of his family members, has been communicating with people via writing. He still can't speak because he's still intubated, so he can't speak. Mm-hmm. He apparently asked the doctors or those around him who won the game. The doctors wrote back, yes, you won the game of life.
Wow.
So that's pretty cool. They say the next step with DeMar Hamlin is that they're trying to get him breathing on his own, that he still is using some of the oxygen. That's the next step. And they've even talked about getting him to where he's breathing on his own and then getting him home. So
oh,
the fact
so
that,
great.
I mean, that still seems like it's a bit away, right? Like,
yep.
He's not going home today. It still seems like that's still distant next, you know, hopefully a few days, week, who knows. But now that all of a sudden part of the question here or part of the goal is that we're trying to get him home where 3 days ago, I mean, he was.
We're trying to keep him alive.
We didn't know if he was going to make it.
Right.
We didn't know if he was going to make it. So this is really encouraging news about DeMar Hamlin. I'm happy for DeMar. And like his teammates too. I think they needed some, especially with them getting ready to play this Sunday, getting ready to play in the postseason. It's good that they have some encouraging news on that front, because I think it does give them peace of mind.
His dad yesterday did a Zoom with the entire team, and they said they needed that. And then to piggyback on that, to have this news today and the doctor saying what they've said and given this update, it has to be uplifting for that entire locker room, because I said it then, I'll say it now. Look, take all the time you need, and whenever you get home, get home. But the most important thing is you're alive. Because whether you play football or not ever again is irrelevant. The fact that you're living, and because you have all of your brain functions, and they said that it looks like everything neurologically is intact and is going to be intact and be good for him, and that the fact that he's squeezing his family members' hands and he's on the road, stay on that road, take as long as you, I don't care what the speed limit is, take as long as you like, young man, but that is the best news anybody could have hoped for.
Yeah, encouraging news. We hope it continues to progress. It seems like very good right now with DeMar Hamlin, considering the situation.
I did see Sauce Gardner actually tweet out today. He said that he couldn't get a Hamlin 3 jersey for pregame warmups in time for the game this weekend. So if any Bills fans could help him out, that he wanted to wear one in warmups. And you've seen the outcry and the outpouring of support across sports. I'm sure we'll see a ton of it this weekend.
Yeah, yeah. So that's encouraging news there. Now, the NFL does have business to tend to. Don't, you know, not trying to be insensitive or callous in any way, but the NFL is trying to figure out how to go on. And a lot of people are weighing in on what could happen or what they're hearing. I ultimately think at the end of the day that they are going to just rule this a no contest and not play this game. But Adam Schefter this morning said that he believes the NFL will not look to resume the Bengals-Bill game, and that the league is working towards either a potential neutral site AFC championship game or the one seed choosing between getting having a bye or home field, with the two seed getting whatever is not picked. Let's start with that second one, where they would have a the AFC. They would have the one seed choosing, but if they don't play this game, now you're looking at a no contest, the win percentage, all of that. The one seed would now get the choice, under Schefter's little theory here, choosing between getting having a bye in the first round, or they would have home field advantage with the two seed getting whatever is not picked. I don't like this idea at all. The NFL, one, works for the teams. The NFL works for the owners. Roger Goodell works for the owners. The NFL needs to be the business here, the company, the decision maker when it comes to making a hard decision here. The NFL putting this on one of their teams, oh, you go good to pick what you want. You can either pick the bye or you can pick home field advantage. I don't like that at all from an NFL perspective. They need to be the one that makes the hard decision, not kick that can down the road to the one seed or the two seed. Secondly, they're only looking at the top end of the flow chart and not the bottom end of the flow chart. The Cincinnati-Buffalo game doesn't only affect the one seed, the two seed, the three seed, but there's also other scenarios in play where it has ramifications on the four seed, the five seed, everybody that plays. So, like, only picking one game because of the ramifications of not playing this game as opposed to the other two or three potentially, I think is failure by the NFL.
I do, too. I think, as we were talking about it, there's no perfect solution to this. There's no right answer. But I think that you have to try and take into consideration all of the teams affected by this and factor them in as well to make the right decision. And we talked about a neutral site game. I brought it up yesterday because I thought that as much as, you know, there's going to be some fans, especially that balk at this, it might be one way where at least you can show the most amount of impartiality in a very, very, you know, no-win situation. I think that we understand, just like no one expected COVID. And when COVID happened, you had to adapt on the fly. And it wasn't ideal for anybody.
Yeah.
But I think this is the same way. And you can't just worry about the Bengals and the Chiefs and the Bills. You have to worry about the Patriots and the Ravens and all these other teams that this game is hanging on. And you've got to do it fairly. That's why I my initial thought all along was you just got to move it. I understand TV and revenues and money, but you just got to move everything back a week. Use that week between the conference championship games and the Super Bowl where no one plays. And use that time as bought in time so that you can get this game played and it can be played out fairly in the playoffs, which is what every team has played for all year long.
Yeah. One of the other Schefter scenario that he talked about, a potential neutral site AFC championship game, and Florio reporting some wild things too like expanding the playoffs. Can you do any of this? What's the best possible solution? 713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Razor-sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, the NFL proposals that they have, we talked about the Schefter one. We had a couple of them, actually. The whole idea of the one seed in the AFC choosing between getting a bye or home field advantage is kind of silly to me. I don't like that the NFL is putting that decision on a team. And also, I think it's being short-sighted to only the top of the playoffs as opposed to the bottom of the playoffs that would also be affected by no Bengal, no Bill game, which I don't think they're going to play. The second one is a potential neutral side AFC championship game. You brought up this idea yesterday. I don't mind this idea. I think it's fine. Only if it affected those teams, though. Like, why are you playing a neutral site game between, let's just say, the Chiefs and the Bills whenever this game would have also had ramifications on the 3-seed, 4-seed? So it seems like they're kind of like picking and choosing which game should be neutral site, even though they all have equal importance to a bunch of different scenarios.
Call me stupid if I am, but the other thing is it's easy to say the neutral site AFC championship game if it gets to that. But on the front end, who gets the 1-seed and the bye? You still have to determine that.
Well, in this scenario, if they go, the game gets banged, and they don't, they just go by win percentage, and they don't have the scenario where the one seed's choosing, then it'd be win percentage, which would still be influenced based on what happens in Week 18.
Okay.
So that the one seed would
because
just be the one seed.
I even when I suggested it, I thought the neutral site was a solution, but I didn't know how it was going to affect the seeding in terms of the matchups in Week 1,
right,
of the playoffs. So, I mean, there's no good way to figure all of this out. Someone's going to be ticked off. Some team's going to be ticked off no matter what. Probably several. I just think that the best way to do it is to still play the game and then buy enough time to start the playoffs with a delay. And I don't think financially, and because of all the revenue and because the networks have such a massive say-so in everything that happens, I think that's why we're not thinking harder about trying to make sure that game's played.
Yeah, I think that they're more concerned about keeping everything aligned, not really altering the playoff schedule and structure.
The network scheduling is so impactful that they don't want to admit it.
I think there's far more importance from an NFL perspective and a business perspective on that than there is, like, let's figure out a way to play Bills Bengals. And I really don't disagree. I'm of the opinion you don't get too cute with any of this. You just say Bills Bengals is a no contest. It's not going to be played. Look, we have precedents of this in sports. Usually it's in baseball, and usually it's with teams that are eliminated in the playoffs. But all the times we see Major League Baseball teams don't play 162. They've had games postponed, and then all of a sudden they're eliminated from playoff contention, so they just don't play a game 162. Now, game 162 versus game 16, 17 in the NFL are two very different things. It's 10 times more in Major League Baseball about. I'm of the opinion they should just go ahead and cancel it. It's a no contest. Neither team gets a win, and you go win. That's the same thing. It's the same thing win percentage-wise. Okay. Yeah, it doesn't affect the win percentage at all.
Like when we're talking about Texans having a tie versus the Bears,
No contest and a tie is the same thing.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the same thing from a win percentage perspective. So it really doesn't influence anything. I think they shouldn't play it. They should just call it a no contest, go win percentage, and just keep everything as is. Florio of Pro Football Talk, he said, here's a look at where things currently stand as to scheduling. No Bills-Bengals game, so it looks like that's going to end up being the decision, according to Florio, according to Schefter. NFL figuring out what to do with AFC seeding. We'll see what happens. Something else that's on the table, neutral site for AFC championship is possible. Same thing that Schefter reported. And the most radical idea that I've heard that I cannot support, I cannot stand, I think it'd be outrageous and silly, especially to do it now, the timing of it. Expansion of playoff fields to 8 teams in AFC and NFC is possible.
Now, I would get that to answer my previous question about the bye and the first round matchups, because then everybody would play in the first week of
the playoffs. You'd have an 8-team playoff, you're going to have a bye.
Then there would be no bye team, and then you avoid all of that kind of back and forth, and the people that had a problem with that, and everybody would play. But it also, like you said, but at the also on the bottom side of things, it might also help a team like the Patriots that has to win and get in, or teams that
well,
are, or the Lions in Brendan's case, on the bubble looking like, you know, they need a lot of help, they could actually get in now. So you look at all these different scenarios and think, hey, if you want to talk fair, I think that to me would be you keep the same schedule, but everybody plays. I think that's fair.
Can you imagine the asterisks that goes along with the championship if an 8 seed gets in and wins it all?
Why would there be an asterisk?
Why is there an asterisk?
Are you kidding me?
It'd be harder.
Right, but they shouldn't have been in.
Oh, if an 8 seed wins.
Specifically if an 8 seed were to win.
I thought you meant any team.
No, I'm talking about if an 8 seed were to get in and win in a scenario where any other year they wouldn't have been in.
Right.
I mean, obviously, like, if it gets the Lions, then I'll take it. But,
sure.
But, like, that would be the biggest asterisk thing in all. Like, I don't think you could find one that would be bigger. It would be bigger than the bubble.
And you're the league, and you're there to help the owners. You got an extra team in on either side. The biggest hit you take is if somehow, some way, a snowball's chance in hell, that final seed goes all the way and wins it. You'll run the risk and gamble with that.
And you feel pretty good it's not happening.
Yeah, as opposed to teams that busted their ass all year and might get bounced out because you're ruling a game a no contest late in the season. I think that they'll live with that.
I think it's really stupid. I think it's so stupid.
Though?
Because you're 2 days away from playing week 18 of the NFL season, and all of a sudden you're going to be like, okay, we're going to add an 8th playoff team in the AFC and the NFC, and no one's really affected. Like, whoever makes the playoffs as the 8 seed, they're not affected by the Bengals and the Bills cancellation. What you're trying to do is you're trying to neutralize the bye. Like, the reason you would add an 8th team, and in the interest of fairness, because the Bills-Bengals game has been ruled a no contest or whatever they decide to do with it, not play the game, is because you're trying to neutralize the bye, not because the 8th seed is affected in any way or, you know, shape, form, or fashion.
Right, but it's the fairest way to avoid neutral site games and blowing off the week between the Super Bowl.
Well, it's the best way to eliminate a neutral site game.
Right, that's what I'm saying. You eliminate that.
Yeah.
You eliminate that week that they love in between the conference championships and the Super Bowl.
You would still have it.
You'd still have that.
You still keep it.
The networks keep their schedule on schedule.
And you add a game.
And you add a game so there's more revenue from a broadcast perspective. You take a team that's been fighting their tails off all year and you reward them as opposed to a team that had no chance of getting in.
Should you be rewarding them, though? Should you all of a sudden reward the 8th team?
But Jeremy, it's not like something you're going to do every single year. It's the one caveat that you can question, but that basically makes the most sense because it's still a team that had a chance to get in that is looking for help in the last week of the season for the probably.
I'm not in the interest of helping those teams, though. They have not been affected by this at all. Like, that's kind of my hang-up.
Because of this rare occurrence.
I understand that, but like, it's what we were talking about yesterday. Like, you have a bunch of bad decisions. You're trying to make the best decision,
right.
The best bad worst decision, right? I don't want to benefit the 8th team at the benefit of the number one team of the AFC because I'm going to neutralize the number one, number two seeds in the AFC. Now I'm going to reward an 8th team in the AFC, and they're even talking about an 8th team in the NFC. Why in the world would you add a team in the NFC? That makes no sense.
No, but it does make sense because you don't want the only one seed that gets a bye on that side and has it. Then you can say they had an easier route because everybody else had to play week one.
That's a good point.
That's why I would say that they would do it on both sides.
I hope the NFL does not add an 8th team. I think the 8th team is a terrible idea. That all of a sudden you get to
I think of all solutions, it makes the most sense.
Do you think that makes the most sense?
Instead of neutral site, instead of blowing off the week, instead of blowing up the network scheduling and all the different things and all the revenue that they're worried about.
But you can do that with a no contest and not add an 8th team. You can do the same exact thing, keep the structure. And like you're with the 8th team in the playoff, unless there's an extra caveat too, you're still not fixing the home field advantage in the AFC championship game problem.
That's true. You're right. I'm trying to think if there's a way to actually still get
unless
around that.
You could go, okay. This is what I don't like this scenario, but this is like the scenario where it kind of appeases all parties. You add the 8th team, and I guess if you do it to the AFC, you also have to do it to the NFC because the path has to be the same.
Right.
That's a great point. That's why the NFC would have the 8th team as well. We were talking about it during the break. Why would you do it with the NFC? Well, that's why.
Yep.
You add the 8th team. You have the 1 seed, 2 seed, whatever. It doesn't really matter a whole lot at this point. It does affect the opponents you play, but it doesn't matter a whole lot at this point. And then you have the neutral side AFC championship game.
I think
so. It'd be two things. The
8
team. So you eliminate the bye. The 8 team eliminates the bye. You're not rewarding anybody a bye. And on top of that, you have the neutral side AFC championship game.
I think
we figured it out.
Yeah, I think
we figured it out.
It's the least disruptive of all of the different scenarios that have been out there, and it's not one that we've even heard about yet. They need to call us immediately because we need to
Florio said the 8th team.
Well, but we're telling you how to take it a step further to make it as fair as possible.
I think we just figured it out.
Yeah.
What is wrong with that? What is wrong with that scenario? 713-780-ESPN. And I was anti-eight teams. And now I'm on favor of it.
You're
in
welcome.
Favor of it.
We're here for you.
Yeah, we just had to talk it out. 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Mitch, you're in the Hive of the Killer Bees. What's up, Mitch?
Hey, guys. Think about it. A
13-3 and a 14-3. Who's number one seed? The 14-3. No, 14-3 is better than 13-3. Mitch, that's 14-3 is a better record than 13-3. 13-3 would be a half game behind 14-3 in the standings. Brendan's got his hand in his face and just shut, like, total disbelief.
You played one more game and you won it. Like, obviously, it increases your winning percentage.
I wonder what the math on that is.
I mean, it's minuscule. It's a better winning percentage by a very tiny amount.
13 divided by 16. We're doing math on the air. Is 8-12-15. Or is 8-1-2-5. Remember that number.
So 81%.
I just needed a dashboard.
It might come
camera.
Down to percentages, though.
Just once when we had a caller on this show. I wish we had a dashboard camera when Mitch just got that.
82% would be 14-3. So that's the math on it. 82% if you're 14-3. 81% if you're 13-3.
In Mitch's defense,
favorite call ever.
In Mitch's defense, for a large portion of my life, I had no problem doing like basic, even multiplication in my head, and that is gone. Having a calculator in my phone has taken that away from me 100%. But yeah, no, that was an easy answer.
That was my favorite call of the day. Champ of the day, right? They do that. Corey says, could you imagine if they add the eighth team, the Eagles end up the number one, and Hurts can't play because he needs the bye week to get healthy? What a fascinating caveat. I didn't even think about that because Hurts right now banged up. We don't know if he'd be available in the wild card round of the NFL playoffs. Yeah. Now, all of a sudden, you're really impacting the Eagles'
chances. They need
chances.
To hurry up and make this decision.
Yeah, they need to
it
make a decision.
It has to happen before Sunday for sure.
Saturday. I mean, there's two games Saturday, right?
Yeah, you're right. It has to happen before Saturday.
I think it needed to happen at the beginning of this week because we know how the NFL is so structured. They go through game plans. They do all of this. To me, it's a decision that you have to make beginning of the week. Now, the situation that was presented makes it very difficult. I think that you have to make this by the end of the day. I think by close of business today that they need to figure it out because you have teams traveling tomorrow.
I don't disagree with you.
Teams
are
traveling
tomorrow.
I just
don't think that they're ready to do that.
They got. I mean, when is the last that they could do it? I think it's close of business today before a single team
tomorrow.
Travels.
I think it's tomorrow.
It would have to be tomorrow morning. It cannot be once a team gets in the air, in my opinion.
So, and you're talking about because of those Saturday games?
Two teams are traveling tomorrow.
I think that realistically, they think they have till close of business tomorrow.
They probably do.
Because I think if worst case scenario, you push a flight back to a night flight. It's not ideal, but they're still traveling a full day before the game. A day before the game.
It might be Friday, but they got to decide immediately. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Did you see that Houston Rockets coach last night, Steven Silas? Boy, he was fired up. We loved the energy. But why that energy was misguided? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. Administration of employee benefits is a hassle. Let HRNP eliminate those burdens and save you money. Visit HRP.net today. Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees. On ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Rockets lost basketball yesterday. They've been losing basketball a lot.
Is it fair to say the score was not indicative of the game?
Well, I didn't see the final. All I saw was Silas get thrown out when they gave up 41 points. Not in the first quarter, but at that point. In the first quarter. What was the final?
The final was 119-108 or something like that.
Definitely not. No.
They were down.
I gave up on that game early. I gave up on that game early.
In the first half. Yeah. It was ugly.
Rockets have lost five in a row. They've lost nine of their last 10. And Steven Silas got ejected from yesterday's game. That ejection was probably a cumulative ejection.
Oh.
A lot of things he didn't like. Of course, he didn't like the calls early in that game. He got thrown out at the end of the first quarter. The frustration that is growing within the team. We saw Eric Gordon kind of say, well, he didn't kind of say it. He said there is no progress with this team. I think Silas probably feels the pressure of that a little bit. Probably feels his seat getting warm a little bit as well. So I think that all of that stuff built up with Silas that caused him to get that ejection yesterday. I don't care if a coach gets ejected. This isn't going to be some soapbox hot take. Oh, a coach should be above that. I don't care when coaches get ejected at all. I don't care when they get fired up.
Sometimes they do it purely for motivation.
Yeah, I have no problem with getting fired up over officiating, getting thrown out of games. I don't, unless it's like a critical game where your team needs you.
Right.
Playoffs. If you get thrown out in a regular season, do not care. What bothers me from that is, like, Steven Silas doesn't show a whole lot of emotion very often.
Right.
I don't care that he gets fired up with officiating, but that, like, energy, that anger, I don't think that he's channeling it properly towards officiating. I want to see, and we will never see this because we're not privy to practices, Steven Silas needs to be acting that way at practices. Steven Silas needs to be acting that way when his team is not playing defense. Steven Silas needs to act that way when his team shows zero energy and zero desire to be on the basketball floor in an NBA game. His fire and his energy, you want to give that to officiating? That is fine. But you need to be giving that energy and passion towards your team and trying to get the most out of your team, because I don't see that from Steven Silas.
I'm going to tell you what this was, Jeremy. This was the culmination of a building shaken soda bottle that was ready to explode, and he finally just couldn't take it anymore. That man is under so much pressure. And I don't disagree with anything you've said, because we've talked about it before. You know, he is losing his locker room. He is not getting through to these kids enough. He's not running the systems on either end of the floor that need to be run so that these kids are developing quicker. But on top of that, he's not coaching this team. He has so many cooks in the kitchen right now, headed up by their general manager, and so many people telling him on a day-to-day basis what he needs to do, what he doesn't need to do, who he needs to do it to, that at a certain point, it all gets to be just, it builds up to the point where you just can't take it anymore. And it might just be for one game. But this was then Eric Gordon piling on the other night and him obviously taking that personally as well and going, you know what? This just more and more every day feels like a no win for me because I can't coach this team the way I want to coach it. I can't get through to these kids the way I'm supposed to get through. It wasn't the job I signed up for in the first place, but I still want to do it. But I want to do it my way and I'm not being allowed to do it. And then I've got, you know, anarchy with, I've got my players and my veteran player on this roster coming back at me. I've got my team getting the doors blown off, by a good Pelicans team that doesn't have Zion Williamson, and I'm getting embarrassed. I'm just, for one night, I'm out. I'm just,
yeah.
I can't take it anymore.
I want to see that anger and angst and desperation and fire to the young players. Because this team, like, we talked about this yesterday. If you were to take a peek for this Rockets team so far to date, and I understand they've only won 10 games, there's not a whole lot of a peek there. It was probably 3 weeks ago, right? 2-3 weeks ago where they were playing competitive basketball.
Beating some good teams.
I think that they had an above-average record in their last 10, which they haven't done in a very, very long time. They have gone backwards. And I don't feel like Silas, and look, whether there's a lot of cooks in the kitchen that are impairing this, that is a more of an organizational thing than just a Silas thing, but Silas ain't fixing it, right, because he's allowed it to go on, is that, like, that needs to be redirected to this team playing defense, to this team having effort, and to getting the most out of this team. And if he has too many cooks in the kitchen that are impairing that, then Steven Silas needs to take a stand and make sure that does not happen, because he's going to get fired one way or the other, more than likely. For the Rockets to have, like, growth and development going forward, one of two things needs to happen. Steven Silas needs to take command of his team and what's going on behind the scenes and having not desire and anger directed at officials, but toward his team getting effort and defense, or you're going to have to find a head coach that is willing to do that and that is willing to slam the door on people's faces, that said, this is my team that you've given me. I'm going to coach them up. If those things don't happen, one of the two, it could be Silas that does this. I don't have a whole lot of confidence in that, but it could be. If one of those two things does not happen, this Rockets rebuild, this progression, this young team that's developing going forward with a playoff core, they're going to stunt the growth of the organization.
Short term, it's still doing you a favor because you still control your own pick, and at least you know you'll be in the running to get one more big-time player to add to the roster. But long term, it's really stunting the growth because you're not developing these kids along the way, and they're not getting better with each passing game and practice. And I think that there's so many different ways to look at this. At a certain point, if Silas has had enough and he feels like he's not being allowed to do the job, this goes back to what you had said about Caserio or the Bill O'Brien philosophy with Cal McNair, and basically just saying, hey, it's your show, run it, and give it all to him. But Tillman Fertitta's got to get involved, because Tillman Fertitta's not happy with this team. He's not happy with the way they're playing. He's not happy with the head coach. But he's got to get more involved then, and he's got to be more of what Les Alexander was, going to practices for a while, going on the team planes, trying to figure out what exactly is going on and isn't happening. Because the other thing, which is a fault of Silas's, is the fact that he defers too much. Every time we hear that there was an issue going back to last year with Christian Wood or KPJ or the other things that have happened, well, who's the fall guy? John Lucas. He's the guy that gets the players lashing out at them because he's the guy that's delivering the punishment. Mm-hmm. No, the head coach has to be able to guide to do that. He, in practices, when I hear from Kelly Eco and other guys and people that are covering the team, say when guys need to be talked to, when they need to be instructed, it's Luke doing a majority of that. It's a veteran like Lionel Hollins. Your head coach at a certain point is losing the locker room because guys are going, well, who's really the head coach running the show if these are the guys that are telling me the do's and the don'ts and the yeses and the no's?
A lot of times, too, the best coaching is delivering news you don't want to hear. Like, if you have young players that are, like they feel like they're immune to hearing negative things about their game, then that player is not going to get better. That player is not going to develop.
But, Jeremy, that's the thing. Thanks to AAU and recruiting even on the high school level, the silver spoon player is not an abnormality anymore. It's the norm.
Sure.
And there's too many of these fragile kids coming into the league that don't like to be yelled at or called out.
You're right. You're right. But if I'm in the position of a Steven Silas, like, either you're going to demand that they get that way, and if you demand it, they might get you fired. Like, that probably exists. Like, we saw it with Kevin McHale and James Harden, where if you demand a lot out of a superstar or a player who has a lot of clout in the organization, they can get you fired. So that is dangerous. It's dangerous to play that game. You have to earn the respect of the player, or you're going to get fired because you're not developing the player. So, it's damned if you do, damned if you don't. And if it's me, and look, it's not me, I understand that, I'm picking option number one. I'm going to try to get the respect of that young player to let him know. My desire here, like criticizing you, talking negative things about you, and like, you're not doing it publicly. You're doing it, you know, man to man. You're doing it in film sessions, things like that. You're like, you need that player to trust you, that you're trying to get the most out
Here's
of him.
The other thing,
but
though,
I'm going door number one, not door number two.
If I know my ass is on the line, too, and I know that my seat's getting hotter by the minute and everybody's pointing at me, what do you got to lose? Go in there and tell Kenyon Martin Jr., I don't care what your dad thinks anymore. Mm-hmm. I care about how you play. And if you play like you played last night, because he's actually one of the guys that played well, you're going to play more. And guess what? Jalen Green, I don't care who's anointed you what and how many people think you're going to be a superstar. If you keep pulling bad off-balance 35-foot shots after an isolation play instead of making the right pass, I'm going to sit your ass down.
See, that's what I'm talking about with Silas. Like,
that's
the energy.
Saying.
Like the fire. Show fire at a dude taking
point,
a bad shot.
He has to look in the mirror and go, whether rightly or wrongly, I'm going to be the fall guy, so I might as well go down in a blaze of glory doing it with the way it's supposed to be done.
Exactly. Like, you allow what you allow. If you allow a dude to take a 36-foot fadeaway, you're allowing that. If you're not coaching up a dude who's not getting back on defense, you're allowing that. Corey says, I've never seen that much fire from Silas. Honestly, that's one thing I've not seen from him and wanted to see. Hopefully it carries over to the team. I need to see it directed towards the team.
Yes.
If doing it to the officials is fine. I don't care. If he wants to do that to officials, that's fine. But you can't stop there. It's got to be for things that you're willing to accept or not accept when it comes to your team as well. There are some Rockets trade rumors. There's also some breaking news out of Austin in the college basketball game. Chris Beard has been fired.
Wow.
We'll get to that. We'll also get to a Brendan draft scenario when it comes to the Houston Texans. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Chris Beard has been fired as the basketball coach of Texas. Of course, he was on an indefinite suspension after the alleged battery of his significant other. But Chris Del Conte just issued a press release. The University of Texas parted ways with Chris Beard. This has been a difficult situation that we've been diligently working through. Today, I informed Mr. Beard of our decision to terminate him effective immediately. We thank Coach Rodney Terry for his exemplary leadership both on and off the court at a time when our team needed it most. So Chris Beard is out. I'm a little surprised it took took him this long, to be completely honest with you. Keeping him this long tells me that Texas really wanted to keep Chris Beard, that they were trying to figure out a way to make it work, but have come to the point now where they realize they aren't going to make it work. Surprised it took him this long. I didn't think Chris Beard was ever going to return as the basketball coach of Texas, but they make it official. Chris Beard is out as the basketball coach at the University
of Texas. Just a really, really wild scenario and situation, because it's a guy that said all along that was his dream job, and he left a really good job with a really good program at
Texas
Tech.
Shouldn't beat up his old lady.
And that's, I don't disagree with any of that, but then when his old lady came out publicly and otherwise talking to the authorities to try and say it was in self-defense and he didn't do it, and you wonder how, you know, sincere that was, but you had to at least factor that into the equation. We've seen that happen so many times before with different situations like this, where there's, you know, remorse the day after, and there's ramifications obviously for what was done. But I thought that there was going to be a path where maybe it not be this year, but because, like you said, it seems like the university really wanted to keep him and the players really liked him, that they were going to try and ease his way back in. But now, with this abruptly coming today, I'm shocked. I'm surprised. And that's as desirable a job as there is out there in the country. And it's going to be really interesting how they fill this position.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to be, obviously, whenever Texas is looking for a coach, they're going to hire one of the better ones that are out on the market. They did that with Shaka. They did that with Chris Beard, taking him away from Tech. But even if his significant other, his fiance, doesn't press charges, I forget the town that it was in, one of the outskirts of Austin.
The authorities have the right to still see it through.
Right. They don't need her permission to press charges. Secondly, let's just say that they don't press charges. Let's just say that the town that he's in, outside in the outskirts of Austin, that they said, you know what, we're not going to file charges on Chris Beard. Even if they did that, the perception of it's reality. Like, it exists. Like, the story is out there. Everybody knows the story. You walk into Allen Fieldhouse. You go into Lubbock. You go to Ames, Iowa. That's not going away. Like, that's something that's going to follow you around forever. So, like, the perception of the reality of the situation, even best case scenario for Chris Beard from a legal point of view, was never going to be good enough to, again, take over the helm of the basketball coach position at Texas. Like, Texas had to do this. I'm shocked it took him so long, quite honestly.
You bring up a good point, because you know that it's inescapable when you walk into a road game that college kids aren't going to attack, and be all over that.
Could you imagine he goes into Lubbock with that?
My goodness.
It'd be game over.
It may be that the only way that he continues his career in coaching is on the professional level. That he takes the route for completely different circumstances and reasoning. But what Kelvin Sampson ended up doing when he was dealing with all he was dealing in the college game, he went and he basically, as an intern, a coaching intern under Greg Popovich and under the Bucks for a while, he started to pave a way to where he became an unbelievable professional coach and ultimately the defensive coordinator and number one assistant under McHale, that then led to him being the head coach and getting back into the college game. This is a much more difficult path.
Absolutely.
And this is a lot more of a very urgent set of circumstances to where Beard, I don't know that he ever coaches college basketball again.
What happens legally is going to be a huge influence on what happens to him professionally. Like, best case scenario, let's say the outskirt of whatever town he lives in, I can't remember, outside of Austin, they decide, the police department there, not to press charges. The fiance is, like, all in support of Chris Beard. I can see a path where he coaches college basketball again. Now, if it's worst case scenario, let's say he does go just to court. Like, what if he does any sort of jail time? I think he's done professionally altogether. So what happens legally is going to impact for sure the rest of his professional career. But Chris Beard out as the head basketball coach at Texas. One other Rocket note that has been, where did you see this, Blankers? The Milwaukee reportedly close to a deal with the Suns for Jay Crowder. Third team in the deal is going to be a three-way with the Houston Rockets. Apparently they want more draft compensation. So looks like the Rocket, I'm imagining this is Eric Gordon. It doesn't mention Eric Gordon by name.
During the break, it just seems like Phoenix has a malcontent in Jay Crowder for whatever reason. That relationship's over. The Rockets would like the relationship with Eric Gordon to be over. And Rafael Stone would like to get even more draft capital, because after this year, we know that he needs help in getting good picks. So I'm sure he's after as much draft capital as he can get.
Yeah, and it's interesting that it's on hold for now. This seems to me like it'd be the right scenario for an Eric Gordon, though. Like
it really
three-way trade. Like if it's a three-way trade, maybe you're not getting a first from Phoenix, but maybe you're getting a couple seconds, or maybe you're getting like a future Milwaukee first, something like that. This seems like an ideal scenario for the Houston Rockets.
But a year ago, the people that I talked to said Phoenix offered a first-round pick for Eric Gordon. Stone said, "Hold that thought. I don't think that's a high enough pick for us. We'll get back to you." By the time he got back to them, they weren't interested in him, and that deal fell through. Now we're talking about the a situation where, again, it looks like for the time being, the Rockets are the reason why the trade didn't go through, because they were looking to get more. At a certain point in time, don't play fire with fire anymore. Don't mess around too much and mess up a good thing. Take what you can get. Get out from under the whiny, always upset Eric Gordon that's worried about me, and keep developing the young nucleus that you have, because I don't like when I hear these things that the Rockets wanted to get more. At a certain point, cut your losses and develop your talent.
At what point, what's the minimum you would take?
If I get a late first, I'm ecstatic. If I get a couple of late first-round picks to be determined to where they fall based on where those teams are later, like a couple years from now, mm-hmm. I'm even happier, because I don't have control of my own pick for so long with OKC. And I'm hoping that the Nets just completely fall and trip all over themselves and unload all of their superstars. So instead of having those kind of high-risk scenarios, I could at least get some more first-round picks where if I have to take a couple of them, combine them, make a trade to move up or get what I need, I have more options. I'm taking a late first and or multiple late first from Phoenix and Milwaukee and getting out.
I mean, if I
get a first and a second?
If I get a first, period, I'm doing it. But, like, if I get a late second for Eric Gordon, I almost rather just, like, not let Eric Gordon
get better offers before the trade deadline.
Right, that's why, like, the compensation matters here. Sure. Like, the Rockets are holding out for more draft compensation. I like that if the offer right now is just one of their second rounders. I couldn't care less about a late second rounder. We see teams all the time sell second round picks on draft day. So if that's what the offer is for Eric Gordon, I'd rather just wait. And if even if you get to the point where if you're at the deadline and you pass the trade deadline and you still have Eric Gordon on the team, it's the final year of his deal. Just John Wall him. Tell him to stay home. Like, don't let him come to round the team.
I thought they extended him. He's got another year.
No, this is the last year of his deal.
The initial rumor of the three-way trade came out at a hardwood paroxysm.
Okay, yeah, I've heard of that.
Yeah, to me, looking at it, get rid of Eric Gordon as fast as you can. And I understand you want competition so you get the most for him, but you already have a ton of young players on as a nucleus for right now.
He does. Next year, he's under contract, but it's non-guaranteed. Okay. So you can get out of it after this year for free.
I knew there was another year.
There
on
is
it.
A year.
I didn't know that it was non-guaranteed.
It's a non-guaranteed. It becomes fully guaranteed if he makes an all-star team.
He ain't doing that.
Or a Houston championship.
He ain't doing
what
that.
What is more likely? He makes an all-star team? In the Rockets?
All-star team.
Probably all-star team. But yeah, if a late first, I'd do it in a heartbeat for Eric Gordon. But a late second, I'm probably out
and
on
you,
that.
And you also think, because I don't know what happened where Jay Crowder was the perfect fit for Phoenix a year ago.
And
before the season started, they were just like done with Jay Crowder. But Jay Crowder is a veteran that brings toughness, that brings defense, that brings three-point shooting. He could help a Milwaukee if he's not going to help Phoenix because they play a similar system. Then Phoenix still needs to replace that Jay Crowder-type element. They wanted a Gordon a year ago. They regretted not getting him after the playoffs were over, saying that was the third scorer we needed. You can still add him and get him, and it basically cost you the same price.
Yeah.
Your late first-round pick, do it.
Yeah, but if it's a second, I don't mind holding out. Brendan had a draft scenario for us, an NFL draft scenario involving the Houston Texans, because I've been very trade down, but it's still totally fine if you get a quarterback. In fact, I want a quarterback in the first round, but I don't want it to be at number one.
Well,
what was your scenario?
You said that yesterday. You said, I want them to come out of this draft class with a quarterback.
Yeah, primarily a first-round quarterback, too.
So you don't want to trade too far back, but yeah. I do think there's a scenario where Young, Stroud, and Levis are all gone inside the top five, especially if you're trading back, because somebody is trading up for one of them.
Sure.
So that's only leaving two more on the board. I'm curious, if you had to pick between taking a quarterback at one or two, if the Texans end up at two, and trading back to six and ending up not getting one, which one would you take?
So you're picking my poison, basically.
Yeah.
You're picking my poison, because I don't want to do this. I want to trade down, still be in the area where you still get one.
You want to trade back, and you want to take a quarterback, but which one is more essential?
And specifically of the quarterbacks, I want Bryce, CJ, or Levis. I really don't have a whole lot of interest in Anthony Richardson. So, some people went, well, you can still get Anthony Richardson there if you're number six. Like, four quarterbacks in the top six, probably a little bit less likely. So, I want one of those three.
Just, and I'm curious your thought on this, but I would say that the reason why I agree with you on that is I'm not willing to wait as long as it's going to take to develop him as opposed to guys that are already, for the most part, developed and just need seasoning.
And more risk, too. There's more risk in having to develop a guy as opposed to like having a turnkey guy, which I think all three of those guys are pretty turnkey. Mm-hmm. I think all three of those guys are starters next year and can be starters for a good team in the right situation, whereas Anthony Richardson, it's going to be a project for Anthony Richardson. Under your scenario of trading down to number six but then not getting a quarterback at number six, I'm taking a quarterback at number one or two. I'd rather have a quarterback at one or two than trade down to number six and then eliminate the option of taking one of those top three quarterbacks. So that's too far for me, quite honestly.
So I think you shifted just a little bit in your willingness of trading back.
Yeah.
Like, well, I think there was at least a moment where you were all in on it.
Oh, I am all in on trading back. But there is a specific criteria that's in play.
I just think that's so dangerous. Like, you can't trade back very far if you're saying, I have to get a quarterback.
You can't. But the good news is those teams that are probably going to be in those in that range probably are going to be in the market for quarterback, where they're going to be looking to trade up to that spot. And it also depends on what you're feeling like the draft board is going to say.
You have to read the board
very carefully. But under this scenario, I trade down to number six, but that eliminates me from one of the top three quarterbacks. I'm keeping my pick at number one or two, and I'm taking Will Levis.
Well, I'm not doing that.
Taking Will Levis if I enter that scenario.
I was with you until you said that. We differ on that. The risk is too great for me. Six is too scary of a proposition, because whether they're there already or they're going to get there quickly, teams are good. This is unlike a year ago. Teams are trying to get up to get a quarterback in the top three.
I think this makes it so that if the Texans end up picking at two and a quarterback does go at one, you absolutely cannot trade back. If you're locked into a quarterback with their top pick and one already goes at one, you can't trade from two, because that means someone's going at two as well.
Right.
So it makes losing even more important if you're on the exact same side as Jeremy.
Actually, the teams that are drafted currently, and this could all change the teams that are drafting, like Houston, Chicago, Seattle, Arizona, Indy's the current top five, then Detroit has six, Atlanta has seven, Las Vegas has eight, Carolina has nine. Like, those teams that I would want to drop back to, three, four, five, those really aren't quarterback-hungry teams. Ooh. Other than the Colts. But are you trading with the Colts? Everybody hates trading in division. I'm not one of those guys. I don't mind trading in division. But if you're to trade down but to still land in the top five, who's trading up? It'd be only the Colts currently.
Do the Colts still have their own pick after all the trades they made to get veteran quarterbacks?
They have pick number five.
Okay, and that they control it, right?
Yes.
Okay. I'm just curious because of, you know, the multiple veteran quarterbacks that they
didn't trade for first, though. They didn't trade their first for them.
Because the question for me is, like, with Seattle, Seattle's not – they can't be enamored with Geno Smith. Geno Smith might be that whole 1 year just finds it all in the perfect storm situation. But if they get a chance to move up to get one of these three guys –
but they're at three.
They're in a good spot now, but if they need to get better, I could see them. Detroit, I don't care what Goff has done for Detroit. I think Detroit is still in the market for a quarterback.
But they're six. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, these teams – like, if you don't want to drop out of the top five, who is that team that you're trading with? Detroit six, that's dropping out of the top five. Arizona doesn't need a quarterback.
Carolina's going to want to move up. They're nine. They're not getting there.
Anthony Richardson makes sense to me at Seattle at pick 19. Like,
I could see that.
They have their first round. They have number three. They draft to help their team, give Geno more time, and then you have Richardson at number 19.
I think Carolina would be the first team to take the look at Hooker too. I think Carolina,
not at nine though.
Not at nine. I'm saying later on in the draft or moving up. At the end of the first round, I think I could see Carolina in position to do something like that, too.
All right, Bad Take Boulevard. We do it every Thursday at 2. Who made the list this week? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports.